Imagine signing this massive supply contract, wiring the deposit, and then you find out the law actually considers that business legally dead. And you're just, well, you are completely on the hook.
Oh man, yeah, that is a total nightmare scenario.
Right. So today, in our deep dive into the South African Companies Act of 2008, we are really looking at this strict mechanical framework that breathes life into a corporate entity, and more importantly, the triggers that authorize the state to pull the plug.
Because the act doesn't just register a business, right? It engineers what is known as a juristic person. It constructs this entirely separate legal entity with its own rights, liabilities, and capabilities.
A completely independent public avatar, basically.
Exactly. And the very first point of contact that society has with that entity is its name.
Okay, let's unpack this, because naming a business here is clearly not like, you know, naming a pet.
No, not at all.
Section 11 of the Act is actually surprisingly strict. Like, your company name cannot constitute war propaganda. It can't incite imminent violence or even falsely imply a connection to a foreign state.
What's fascinating here is why those rules exist, though. It is fundamentally designed to protect the public from deception. Because a juristic person cannot physically speak for itself, its registered name has to do the talking.
So it functions as a mandatory legal warning label.
Yeah, exactly. You see tags like SOC for state-owned or RF for ring-fenced.
Wait, that RF tag, I noticed that in the sources. If I see RF appended to a name, it tells me the company's memorandum of incorporation explicitly restricts its directors.
Right, it restricts their authority to perform certain actions. So the name physically alters the risk profile of doing business with them. It forces anyone interacting with the company to, well, to read the fine print first.
So the state creates this entity,
Right.
labels it, but here's where it gets really interesting to me. If it is an independent person, it can accrue its own independent debt.
And that ties directly into how the government monitors its survival.
Right. So if a business is just having a few bad months, can the government actually step in and stop them from trading? Because I was looking at Section 4, the solvency and liquidity test.
Yeah, that is not just some internal accounting exercise. It's the operational threshold for the company's right to exist. The test demands a strict 12-month forward-looking view.
Just 12 months.
12 months, yeah. And it's on two distinct fronts. First, do your assets exceed your liabilities, fairly valued? And second, can you pay your debts as they become due in the ordinary course of business?
That fairly valued standard seems crucial. Like, a company can't just artificially inflate its book values to mask massive underlying liabilities.
Exactly. The valuation has to reflect actual market reality. If we connect this to the bigger picture under Section 22, this covers reckless trading.
Which brings up the regulatory body, right? The CIPC.
Right. The Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, they actively monitor these metrics, and if the CIPC determines a company is trading recklessly or simply cannot pay its debts, they don't just issue a financial penalty.
Wait, really? They can literally issue a compliance notice forcing them to cease trading entirely.
And they absolutely have the statutory power to do that, yes.
Oh, wow. So they essentially quarantine the business to prevent systemic damage to the broader economy.
Yeah, exactly. If a real estate firm keeps signing new vendors knowing it can't pay them, the CIPC forcibly suspends its legal capacity to operate.
Which means anyone doing business with them, you know, signing a lease, taking a job, extending a line of credit, needs to understand these mechanisms.
Absolutely.
So what does this all mean for you? Whether you are signing an employment contract or starting a side hustle, these invisible legal guardrails govern the safety of your livelihood.
But this raises an important question, right? A lingering tension in the act. We have established that the company is a totally separate legal entity. However, the law demands strict registers to track the beneficial owners.
The actual living humans pulling the strings behind the corporate veil.
Exactly. So if a company is truly an independent public avatar, to what extent are those human operators genuinely shielded from personal liability when the CIPC forces the company into liquidation?
Where does the juristic person end and the human accountability begin? Definitely something to keep in mind the next time you see an RF or an ink on a contract. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.